My name is Andrew Pontius, and this is Edge Cases, a podcast about mostly Apple-related software development and Twitter gossip. This is episode 17. We're recording on Sunday, September 9th, 2012, and today's topic is Why C++ Does Not Suck. So Wolf isn't here this week, so my guest co-host, it's actually kind of hard to say guest co-host, say that five times fast, is my longtime friend, Uwe Kirstrom.
Hello.
So we were talking about this before the podcast, but when I search on Uwe Kirstrom in English language Wikipedia, I actually get two hits. I get a hit for Talking Moose and for some code you wrote, a UK crash reporter for the Mac OS X crash reporter. So that's kind of interesting. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Wolf. Hello. Uwe. Sorry, habits die hard.
Oh, I take it as a compliment. I won't be as fast, though, so bear with me.
We'll speed it up in post.
Yeah, right. That's what special effects are for. Well, so I'm a programmer, Macintosh, iOS, all that stuff, work at Elgato Munich. And so what do I do? Well, I blog a lot, I tweet a lot, and I have a bunch of open source code up on GitHub that people seem to be pretty happy with.
Uh-huh. And you, so what I like that you have the UK. I mean, it always reminds me, you know, United Kingdom, which is kind of cool. Kind of cool that your initials spell that. It's all listed. So, and your website is zathras.de. Do you still use that, actually?
Yeah, I'm kind of working on kind of moving all the stuff that I have on there to different domains, but it's still being used right now. And it'll be referring to everything else for quite a while longer.
Mm-hmm. And so that's zathras.de for those of you following along at home. And then you also, I noticed that the last post there is from last year, but you've got a new blog, which is also linked there, called orangejuiceliberationfront.com.
Yes.
So there. So that's okay. And so we're going to talk about C++ today, and some of that is because you are still a C++ user today. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. We a lot of the software I work on is still using C++ for like the model and parts of the controller layers. So there's a lot of stuff to do there, and some of the code is cross-platform, and there kind of C++ is the language that makes the most sense. Mm-hmm. And we have hardware drivers, so it just you know, sometimes you need to eke out that little bit of performance, but you don't want to get rid of object-oriented programming, and that's right. Where it comes in handy.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you work on the drivers as well?
Not really. Like I kind of get like the key presses from the driver from the remote, and then I kind of hand them off to the UI and make sure they end up in the right spot and things like that. So usually, when it comes to the drivers, I go like, not for me, too scary.
Right. These are lower level. Yeah, sure. Okay. Oh, and then also another thing that makes this a good fit for today is that you are also a podcaster, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's see how my German's going to go here. So Wiederholungstäter, right?
Yes. Correct. Podcast,
I'll put the whole thing in the show notes, the full URL. And let's see here. So German is very rusty, but Wiederholung, is that repeat?
Yeah.
Right. And then Täter is like doer. So it's like repeater or something. I'm assuming it's sort of pun, right?
But yeah, it essentially means repeat offenders.
Repeat offender. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, I wouldn't have got that in a million years by myself.
Yeah, so it's a podcast about TV shows and things. So we have like little 15-minute segments where we just talk about lots of US TV shows, actually, and just give our opinion, things like that. It's a fun little thing.
Yeah. And now, it is in German.
Yes.
So I'm going to have people, you know, hey, go listen to it, but you will need to know German to do that. Now, that's not too far fetched because there are plenty of people in my life for whom the way I talk on this podcast is akin to a foreign language. But, you know, so there you go. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. the topic, so why C++ doesn't suck. So I had a post a while ago, and I'll put it in the show notes, called CocoSwap, where I say that, let's see, a fair number of my colleagues at Apple wouldn't touch C++ with a 10-foot pole, and then I had a little note at the bottom saying, a fair number of my other colleagues at Apple were C++ fiends, and that there was a link there to Clang. So C++ as a language seems to be sort of a love it or hate it kind of language for a lot of the people in our sort of social circle, our professional circle.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to kind of go through some of those things and talk about it and say, you know, maybe C++ has gotten a bit of a bad rap. This is primarily going to be aimed at the people who are sort of hearing other people say bad things about C++ but haven't really thought about it too much themselves. Because while I used to use C++ to write Mac apps as well, haven't done it in a while. I'm going to be a little rusty. I'm going to rely on you a bit early to be sure I've got all of my facts right. But I do think...
No, that's wrong!
You're right. Well, it's not like my normal co-host doesn't stop himself from telling me when I'm wrong and castigating me in various ways. So I'll be used to it. But I would like people to, if they haven't thought about C++, to give it a bit of another thought, because there are some uses for it, which I think make a lot of sense, even in regular iOS and Mac applications that are primarily Objective-C, as many applications are today. Actually, the other thing, so the apps that you work on are Cocoa-based, are they not, or are they still Carbon-based?
Depends on which app you talk. We have a bunch of Cocoa-based, and Cocoa's creeping into all the Carbon apps anyway, so it's hard to tell at this point.
Hard to tell. Well, so that, and that's the thing, because Carbon is definitely going away. It doesn't have 64-bit support.
Yeah.
So using the old APIs, which is, of course, what everybody used to use for their C++ Mac apps, is going to go away, but that doesn't mean that the C++ has to go away completely.
Yeah.
You can still have C++ model logic or cross-platform logic in the midst of UI Objective-C code as well. And I've seen it done, and I know it can be done.
And, I mean, Apple has put a lot of work into making that work.
Right. They've, they unified the exception handling.
Yeah,
correct?
That's a more recent thing, yeah. Just basically that they did the whole Objective C++ language thing where you can just, like, on a statement level, mix C++ and Objective C in the same source file.
Right, and I believe that's old, right? That they pretty much inherited from Next.
I think they kind of rewrote it when they got to macOS 10.
Did they? Oh, okay. But certainly it was there. It seems to me from my recollection it was there from the beginning of the OS 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't something that they added in 10.2 or 10.3. You could write...
Oh, but it got better.
It got better, right. Well, and the other thing that I was curious if you could tell me is my experience, what I'd heard was that the .mm files, and so .mm is the extension you use when you want to compile both Objective-C and C++ in the same file.
Yes.
That those were, it took, that slowed things down quite a bit.
C++ is a very complex syntax, so most of the parsers are noticeably slower, and you really notice that in compile times when you mix it, yeah.
Okay, so that's still true, as far as you're aware.
It's not as bad as it used to be, but it's still noticeable, yeah.
Still noticeable, okay. Now, when I used C++ to make Mac apps, which is probably over a decade ago.
You make me feel old now.
Well, making me feel old. C++ was the way to write cross-platform applications. Because cross-platform in those days meant Windows and Mac.
Yeah.
And today, cross-platform, well, for one, Apple would love it if the only way you used the word cross-platform was to describe Mac and iOS. But I still think that's a bit of a cheat, right?
Yeah.
So, but in terms of the sort of the cutting-edge platforms that a lot of people use these days, that would be sort of iOS versus Android. And my understanding of Android is, since Android uses Java, or some version of Java, for its code, for its APIs, and only has very limited support for even C, and I'm not sure if it even had C++ support.
Yeah, it does.
It does. But my,
it's essentially you have to go through JNI, through the Java to Native interface or something, and so essentially you're kind of like writing a separate library and then have kind of like an pass through the parameters in some weird way, if I remember correctly.
What
kind of like external commands in the old days of HyperCard, I guess.
Yeah, well, and even like, I'm pretty sure there are examples of this sort of thing. Well, it's also, you know, it's like using bridges in Objective-C to get to other languages. So, my remembrance of JNI is that it's not all that much fun to use. It's not something you would want to use widely for the sake of a lot of functionality. So does that sound about right to you?
I mean, I think it's you try to avoid the points at which you have to go back and forth just for performance reasons. I mean, it's the same with any kind of cross-platform code. Like if you write code for C++, you usually don't have NS string, although you could use CF string, which a lot of people do. So you kind of have to, you know, you often find yourself converting from std string to ns string and back or something. Right. So of course, all those connection points you kind of try to avoid.
Right. But my main point is, you wouldn't necessarily be able to use a full scale set of model classes in Android that are C++. Is my understanding. You wouldn't really want to do that in the same way you could use that for a Mac app and a Windows app together. That it's much easier because the languages, you don't need to do translation when just using the language to begin with. You can, well, I don't know, maybe. But in any case, so that's my understanding. My understanding is basically that C++ is not the lingua franca for mobile OSs, that it is still primarily the lingua franca for desktop OSs.
I can get behind that, yeah.
And I've actually seen some people use things like, well, no, I guess. Do you know if C Sharp? Is there a C Sharp for Android at this point?
I haven't got a clue. I know we have Mono for Linux and Mac, but I have no idea how far that is on Android.
Okay, well, that's.
But I would guess it would be kind of a VM on top of a VM.
Yeah,
and,
on top of VM, right. Mm-hmm. It's got its own problems, right? I mean, the nice thing about C++ in the Objective-C world is that it's not a VM. It's just built straight into the runtime, built straight into the binary. So, okay, so enough with the distractions. Get down to the points that I wanted to make. So there are two things that I hear generally from Objective-C developers complaining about C++ and saying why they hate it, why they never want to use it. And the two points that I hear are that, one, C++ is too complicated compared to Objective-C. And two, that C++ is too static compared to Objective-C. So can you think of any other complaints off the top of your head, Oli?
I think that pretty much covers it.
I like having 3 points because I think, you know, 3 points is kind of elegant. Most people have 3 points for things, and I'm like, darn it, I can't think of a third point. So we'll go with two.
Well, the syntax is more too C-like, too low-level.
Right.
I mean, Objective-C has this nice thing where you have method names that are actually, you know, readable, labeled parameters, essentially.
Sure. Now, that's actually, it's been really interesting to me to see the divide there, because Objective-C programmers and C++ programmers, or even any other programmers like Java or C or virtually any other mainstream language, or even C Sharp, there seems to be such a big divide between the people who can take the Objective-C syntax and the people who can't. People who just think, you know, why the hell would I do this? Why would I?
Oh my God, square brackets, everywhere square brackets.
Yeah, it just seems so foreign to people that it's actually a nice way to identify, you know, the people who are going to have a lot of trouble with Objective-C because they just can't deal. So I do think that's, I you know, it's just different ways of doing things. You can live with it any way you want. But it really does seem to bother people. But that's not one of the main points I'm going to make, because I think that's relatively trivial. I think you can get used to it if you really want to.
Yeah.
But in terms of C++ being too complicated, so I have in my hand, if you can hear me sort of hefting it in my hand here, the C++ programming language third edition by Bjarn Stroustrup, the creator.
Everyone pronounces that. I wouldn't know.
Everyone what?
However one would pronounce right. that, I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Oops.
Well, and it's over 900 pages, right? So that is a pretty big book to describe a language. Now, it isn't just, it actually is, I believe, it's got a lot of stuff in it, but it's also got sort of basically, you know, tutorials as well. Maybe not tutorials, but it's got a lot of information. So it's not just a bare bones description of the language. It's trying to really get you to know it in more detail, but still 900 pages is a lot. And I think what people do then when they see this kind of documentation is they say, well, there's just too many features. There's too many things you'd have to remember to write C++. So we're not going to do it.
Yeah, it's definitely a point worth making. I think most people use only part of C++, and kind of every project or every company kind of picks like their subset of C++ to use.
Right, right. And yeah, that's the point that I was going to make. So even in the...
Sorry.
That's fine. We're agreeing. We're not, is that even Stroustrup himself talks about it being a multi-paradigm. Actually, maybe he doesn't mention it that way, but other people do. And actually, what he talks about is the fact that, yes, that it's designed to be a language where you don't need to use all of it at once. So with Objective-C, although, you know, they've been adding quite a few little extra bits to Objective-C for a while. But for the most part, when you sign on to Objective-C, you're signing on to pretty much all of it. You're signing on to inheritance, you're signing on to OOP, you're signing on to, you know, even things like categories are things that most people use a decent amount in regular programs. But in C++, you can use a variety of different ways of programming C++ without using the rest of it. And that seems to be okay. That's sort of officially sanctioned. So, for example, a lot of the specific ways of describing these things I'm getting from that one source of truth on the internet, Wikipedia. So I may be missing a few things here, but when I look at Wikipedia, they talk about, when they say multi-paradigm, that they mention like six or seven different paradigms. But I'm only going to mention a couple of them. So the idea that you can program in C++, even just with functions, if you want to, you can basically write a C program in C++, if you want to. You can just completely not use OOP at all. Object-oriented programming. But it's still a C++ program, because you can do things like function overloading with your functions. So your functions can have several different methods called foo, but they have different arguments in them. Yeah. And that makes it a C++ program, because you can't do that in C, but you're still only using functions.
And it's fun if you have like an Objective-C header and you have a C++ function exported somewhere and then try to call it from straight Objective-C because you think, oh, it's just a C function.
Right.
There's battles fought on projects about that.
Right. The name for that in general is, although there are other names, is procedural. I think it's kind of funny that you can't call a program that uses C functions functional, because that means something else. You can call it procedural.
Hello, prologue.
And then, of course, there's object-oriented programming, which is where C++ and Objective-C seem to have the most meeting of minds in terms of concepts, although, of course, you can't actually have one class inherit from a class of another, the other language. Yeah. And so that's what most people would tend to use if they were coming from Objective-C, I think. Then, of course, the third one that I want to mention anyway is templates, generic programming. And again, getting it from Wikipedia, if you haven't used templates at all, templates are, so their thing for generic programming was, generic programming is a style of computer programming in which algorithms are written in terms of to-be-specified later types that are then instantiated when needed for specific types. Now, an Objective-C programmer might say, well, that's what we do all the time. We specify a pointer to something and then we fill that in at runtime. Well, in this case, you're not filling it in at runtime, you're filling it in later at compile time.
Yeah.
So that's something that a lot of people, take a little while for people to get used to.
I guess the easiest example would be an array. in Objective-C, so in the Smalltalk model, you do an array that just has objects of type ID. So kind of you don't specify the type more closely. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you say, well, NS, it's some subclass of NS object at best because you can retain and release it. Right. And then in C++, you can actually say this array contains only objects of this type, and it will actually kind of create a second class that is specialized for this single type.
Right. Yeah, and we'll get to that in a little more detail in the second bit, in the vector being C++ being a little bit too static. So there are the three different ways of programming in C++, but you don't need to do all of them. Again, as I was saying. And another nice thing about C++ is, while it has a lot of functionality that you can call at runtime, you don't need to pull all of it in if you don't want to. And so the three things I just mentioned are things that you talk about how to program. But let's see. The way that I would phrase it is, the way that other people have phrased it is, the zero overhead principle. So, for example, and again, this we'll also get into when the static section, but for Objective-C, you can only pass messages in a dynamic fashion. You can never bind a method to an object in such a way that it will always be called the same way, it will always be called for only one object, for only one class at runtime. It's always going to be resolved at runtime. Whereas for C++, you actually have to specifically say, okay, this is a virtual member function. It's the terminology they use. Because if you don't specify that, then it would just be a sort of a non-virtual, I don't know exactly how it's described, static. It's not really static, because static means class. Mm. But a regular member function, and that means that the binding will be done right at compile time, and it will be done based on what the object type is right there. And that makes it faster. And I do remember hearing a lot about that when I did used to work in C++, that the books that I was reading, the articles that I was reading, talked about it as if there was a real, you know, sort of life or death whether you decide to use virtual or not, because it's such a big difference in speed. And so if you
really wanted to, 10 years ago it was.
Right. So let's see. So I don't know if you've seen much of this recently, whether it's still that big of a deal, especially in applications that are also using Objective-C, where...
No, I don't think... It's. I mean, some people just out of habit or laziness leave away the virtual keyword, but in general, you just... I declare everything virtual, and nobody's ever complained about it.
Right. Yep. Oh, must be nice. that wasn't the case when I was programming C++. And a couple other examples. So RTTI, which is real-time type information...
Yeah, and again, pretty much doesn't exist in C++, you could say.
Well, but you can use it, right? You can turn it on. I don't remember how to turn it on.
Yeah, but it's kind of, there's very little of it, and a lot of it is not standardized. So, for example, if you're writing cross-platform code, you can't use it.
Okay. Okay, and okay. That's a good thing to talk about at the end. Okay. All right. Well, so let's move on. We've already talked about a couple of things in regard to it with the static. The second point, which is that people complain that C++ is too static. And I already mentioned how Objective-C message resolution is done at runtime. And I remember hearing, and I'm going to get this wrong, I remember hearing or reading someone talk about Objective-C from the Java perspective, so Java programmers. And they talked about how Objective-C got it exactly wrong, in that they pushed to the runtime side of things message resolution so that it became slow there. And then, and this is the part that I might be getting wrong, but then since it required manual memory management, it actually made it too slow on the developer side as well, because you had to handle all the memory management yourself and figure it all out for yourself. Whereas in Java, it was kind of the opposite, although not entirely, and that they did more staticky kind of things to handle. They'd had more static typing at runtime, excuse me, at compile time, to allow things to be faster at runtime. And then they also handled memory management at runtime I don't know. I'm probably getting that all wrong. But in any case, that was...
That's essentially what they do. They have garbage collection, and they have a lot more of static resolving in the language in Java. No, that sounds about right.
Yep. Okay. And so it was really sort of funny to hear someone, you know, take what people often feel is the strength of Objective-C and turn it into a weakness. Now, Objective-C is...
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's if you look at like the reason why so much in C++ is statically decided at compile time, of course, what you can kind of do is you're closer to that proof of correctness of your program. Because you give the program more information about what kinds of objects should be in where and what methods can be called and what can't be. And the compiler can actually check it for you. And if you violate it somewhere, can tell you, hey, you're goofing here. If you do the same thing in Objective-C, what of course happens is you can put any mix of objects into an NS array and send them any message because you're going through an ID pointer, so the program cannot check it. So if you don't exercise that code at runtime in the correct way, you might not even notice that in one case you put the wrong kind of object in.
Right, and I think that's really the rub, is that the people who are sort of Objective-C partisans talk about dynamism as being, you know, the big thing that you get with Objective-C versus static abilities. Mm. I think that's really the rub of it. And what you're mentioning is the other side of it, is saying, well, the more static capabilities you have, the more the compiler can check what you do. And I've actually heard people talk, and again, this is something I can't source because I can't remember who said it. I remember someone saying, well, and they were talking about scripting languages, which are also usually quite a bit more dynamic than your average, you know, C-based language. And they were saying, well, yes, you don't get the same compiler safeguards, but since everyone should be writing unit tests these days, your unit tests will catch all of your problems. And I thought that was, again, I thought that was a bit disingenuous.
Yes, as someone who writes mainly UI code, I can tell you there's pretty much nothing I can unit test.
Right. Yeah, so that's part of it. And I also think that, and this is really the heart of my counter argument, people who say, wow, C++ is so bad, is that Objective-C is really going towards a lot more compile time checks anyway. It used to be, now, a lot of the code that I saw, maybe not a lot of the code, but some of the code that I saw when I first started working on Objective-C and working with older code bases, I saw that a lot of older code bases tended to use ID everywhere. Mm. They just didn't bother with types.
You see it in AppKit. I think NS window content view is typed as ID, not as NS view.
Well, I think anything that still remains of that sort of thing is probably a workaround for some of the fact that you can't guarantee what type a class is when you get it from Apple's sort of class clusters. Mm-hmm. So they can't necessarily say, well, this is an NS window or this is a string even sometimes, because mm-hmm. you could be getting something that is kind of weird but still does all of the right things.
NS path store too.
Yeah. and that's
whatever
actually,
that is.
Well, that's actually a good point. So what I've seen with C++ and with Objective-C is that in 99% of usage, well, actually, so Objective-C, one of the things that Objective-C does where it provides you with more dynamic capabilities is you can send any message to any object, right? Yeah. And that can work at runtime as long as it actually responds to the message.
Duck typing,
right. Well, do you think we need to explain that term to people?
We can just say if it looks like a duck and if it quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. So if you can send the right messages to that object, that's good enough for you to say, well, it's probably that kind of object. I don't have to care more. And that's how Objective-C works.
Now, the thing is, and people tout that over C++, because in C++, you basically can't do that. When they're setting something up, you can use virtual member functions to be able to say, well, you don't need to bind exactly this method call with this class at compile time. you can make it such that any subclass, their method, their implementation, their override of this method will be used instead at runtime. But to my knowledge, you can't say, well, this entirely unrelated class can now be passed in as a pointer in this position.
You can fudge it because they have multiple inheritance. So, of course, you can just define a class with only that method in it. And then every object who wants to receive that method can just call it, can just inherit from that and doesn't need the whole class. But that's the best you can do, essentially. Right.
Well, and the way I've heard this being referred to is weight binding as opposed to runtime binding, because the compiler still needs to know everything about all the classes involved, even if it isn't using all that information at every point. Even if it isn't binding things right at that call site, it still needs to know everything you could possibly do with it at compile time, with the exception of potentially dynamic libraries, which, again, we might talk about a little bit at the end. Okay. But what I've seen in Objective-C, and I'd be interested in your take on this, is that this is actually used pretty rarely. Most of the time, that way, the way that we just said that C++ is circumscribed, is also the way you write Objective-C code. You, for the most part, write code when you're sending a message to something and you're saying, well, it could do anything it wants. What you really mean is, well, but I'm expecting it can handle this message because it is a subclass of, you know, the base class that declared the method. You're not really saying, well, okay, here's this one class that's completely unrelated to this other class, and I'm going to send both of them, let's say, you know, in an array, put both of them in an array, and send that message to every object in the array. You don't do that very much.
Yeah, you usually formalize it with a protocol, for instance, and protocols have actually been more formalized recently, right? You know, with the whole add optional and add required and other extensions to protocols. So, yeah.
Well, and protocols are another way to bring more static typing to your objects, as far as I'm concerned, because it's not just anything goes. It's, oh, no, we're going to be very strict about this. And I pretty much really, you know, I'll use protocols for exactly that purpose. I'll say, well, I want to know when I'm browsing through the code, and I don't know if you listen to the episode, the Cocoa Slide episode, right? We're talking about maintenance. You know, from a maintenance perspective, I think it's really important that when you're reading through the code, especially if you're browsing through it quickly, that there just aren't going to be these surprises, that you know everything that could happen with that code by what's in the code, whereas dynamic typing obviously takes that away.
And if you declare it conforms to that protocol, that's one less surprise because you know, okay, those methods can arrive as well.
Right, and I would even go a little further and say, I rarely like optional methods in protocols. I want to have all of them be required. Now, of course, in different cases, you may need different things, but I like them being required because then you don't have to do a lot of checks for them. You just know, okay, it's not going to compile unless I know that this is implemented, and that makes it easier for me to write code because I don't have to worry about checking everywhere. I don't have to worry about missing a check somewhere.
I like the usability of being able to say, okay, you only really need to implement that method, and for all the other delegate methods, they're useful if you want to customize it, but we'll do the right thing if you don't implement them.
Yeah. Yeah, now, again, as you were saying, the way that I could think of to do those protocols in C++ is to have, you know, mix-in classes, right? Yeah. So it gives you the same functionality there. Now, I've actually... So my only real story about this is I've got... Actually, so another thing is what I have seen in code in the real world is that, well, again, you could have two completely unrelated classes that just implement the same methods. Yeah. In code, and the way you would check for that, the way you would make sure that you don't send a message to something that it can't handle would be, you know, response to selector.
Yeah.
But what I've actually seen in almost all the code I've ever seen in Objective-C is that people don't do that. People do is kind of class instead.
Oh.
You're right. And that's bad, right? Yeah, you really shouldn't do that if you want to retain all of the capabilities, all the dynamic capabilities of Objective-C. But I just see that everywhere. And if you're going to do that, then again...
And you can write C++.
Yeah, then you're just writing C++, really. So again, what I see is that you're not really that far away from C++'s static capabilities.
Yeah.
The other thing that is interesting to me is with the advent of Arc, they took something which used to be just a method declaration, excuse me, not a method declaration, hello, a warning. Why did I confuse those two? It's something that used to be a warning and turned it into an error. And that is when you send a message to an object that the compiler doesn't think it can handle. Right? Because it's the wrong,
you mean
the wrong
retain
type.
Or
no, like any method. Like have you used Arc at all yet?
Not really, no.
Not yet. Yep. So actually when you switch to Arc, Arc needs to know the details of a method when it's sent to a particular object. So it can know what memory management capabilities to apply around that method call. So it needs to know the declaration of a method wherever it's being used. And actually not even the declaration of the method, but whether the object can respond to the method. I believe that's the case. So again, that thing where you used to only see a warning where it said, well, hey, we're not sure if this class can respond to this message. Now it's an error. And it's not an error because they're using more static typing like C++ does. It's solely because so that Arc can do its magic with adding the appropriate retains and releases around those calls.
Okay. But thought it only went by the naming conventions, essentially, and by maybe decorations on the declaration for that.
I think it goes
because
further
I mean
than that.
I know that you can actually turn that warning into an error explicitly.
Right.
And I've done that on some projects, but
no, it's a full error now if you switch to Arc. And I may be getting, maybe some of the little bit of the details wrong, but it's interesting again, so that you're coming at C++ in kind of a roundabout fashion in the same way that we did with other aspects that we've talked about. In that if you do require such sort of static knowledge of methods at compile time, again, you're not that far from C++. Even though, and it's kind of, again, the thing with the Java observation, the Java programmer observation, where they said, well, now you're getting all the disadvantages of static typing.
Without the advantages.
Without the advantages, because it's still slower at runtime. But again, it's sort of interesting. And you're not getting the benefits at runtime because it's not faster. And you're also not really getting the benefits of compile time because it's going by what class you call the thing in your code, which again, it might be completely different than what it actually is at runtime. Because it's not actually checking things that far. It's just checking that the types are correct. So that's, I thought that was kind of interesting where that was coming from.
Sounds a little weird, but then I haven't really had the opportunity to use much of Arc, so
yeah,
well, I'll defer on that.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I wanted to mention about static stuff is that C++, well, in Objective-C, you're passing around pointers everywhere, and in C++, there is, in my recollection, again, you using more modern C++ than I have, C++ really doesn't do pointers quite so much as Objective-C does. They really like passing around copies of things.
Not really. No, it's definitely, it's a kind of a feature for small objects. You can pass objects.
Yeah.
Just like you can pass around an NS point by value. And you didn't used to be able to do that in like classic 68K macOS, for instance. It was like 4 bytes, everything that fit in that you could actually copy, but if it got larger or something like that, you had to actually like memove the struct and things like that.
Right.
C++ kind of did away with that, and they actually copy whole objects if you ask them to. But they also introduced references, which are essentially pointers without the pointer arithmetics.
Right. Right. Yeah,
and you use that a lot. And of course, like with C++ 11 or Boost, you got the shared pointers, which are kind of automatic reference counted pointers, which also don't copy the objects. And a lot of objects are kind of like shallow objects. So like std string, for instance, is actually just a very small object that then points to another object that contains the actual string data.
The value
so in some implementations, but it's not necessarily in all implementations of the C++ standard. If you copy a string, it'll just get a second reference to that second object.
Right, so it has its own kind of retain release implementation sort of inside of itself.
Yeah, but like as an implementation detail that you as a programmer never are exposed to.
Well, the thing that was interesting to me is things like, for example, vector or other container types, where the way I had seen them used is you templatize your container types based on the containers based on the type that they're using. So let's say you have class foo, and you would have a vector of type foo, and you wouldn't necessarily have a vector of type foo star. You'd have a vector of type foo. And so then, as you were saying at the beginning, that how containers in C++ really do, at least by default, kind of enforce the objects being put into them being all exactly the same type.
So in this case they would, yeah.
Right, because foo, because unlike the pointer in Objective-C, where you could pass around the pointer and if it's a subclass of the original class, you're fine. With sort of vector foo, it's copying in the memory of foo into a particular place in memory in that vector's data storage. And it's got to be the right size. It can't be a little bigger or a little smaller because each sort of bucket is sized based on the type. Now, as you said, with string, of course, strings are not fixed in size but they're not fixed in size because they have extra memory that they allocate for the actual string. But in terms of what they actually, the memory that would be copied when you copy an object in say a vector, that memory is exactly the same amount.
Has to be that. It's essentially manually creating a copy, doing an NS string init with string with a parameter you get, and then you're guaranteed to get out a regular NS string. Not some subclass, even if with duck typing or whatever, it would behave the same way.
Uh-huh. Well, right, and let's see, it's actually, I think of it more as, copying, the values of a struct, for example.
Because
it's really memory copying in one sense. But in the other sense, though, of course, in C++, they've got copy constructors and all sorts of other capabilities, because even though, as far as the vector is concerned, the only bytes that got transferred into itself are the IVARs of the foo itself. You call a copy constructor or a copy method or whatever on it, so that the rest of the data, that extra data that a string holds, for example, is also copied, is also successfully memory managed in the midst of all of this. And I always found that kind of fascinating.
I mean, it's kind of like every operator can essentially be turned into a function call that then does the smart thing.
Right. And actually, that's another thing I'd like to get to. But what I'm curious about in this sense is, again, when you have a vector foo, you're saying it's always going to be of class foo. How often does Objective-C really do something different? Because in Objective-C, if you were to pass in, so I guess some of it is you could pass in a lot of subclasses of a particular class into an NS array. And that way, you're still being pretty safe with it because you just assume it's of a particular class, a particular base class, and then you can call the methods on that base class on that thing. That is as far as I've generally seen people go in Objective-C. I generally, again, I don't see a lot of people putting a lot of completely unrelated objects into an array in general.
Yeah, I mean, although you could probably say plists are a good example of where you do it. Because there's dictionaries and numbers and strings and dates and all sorts of stuff.
That's a good point.
So NS user defaults would probably be a little more difficult. On the other hand, most of these objects at some point descend from NS value, and then you can say, well, there's your common base class. Yeah. It's not an unsolvable problem.
Well, and C++ can handle things like that by using, as you mentioned earlier, they can use shared pointers.
Yeah.
Because the reason you don't want to use a regular pointer is because C++ doesn't have the same concept of sort of framework-wide retain release. So if you were to copy a pointer into a into a vector, it would only copy the pointer, and it would have no sense of putting any extra memory hold on the original memory at all.
Yeah, whereas, it's just there can only be one owner. It's kind of the Highlander model of pointers.
Yes, except unless you use shared pointer, in which case then you get a lot of the same semantics as Objective-C, that as long as that shared pointer exists, that original memory will also stick around. Now, do you find yourself using shared pointers much in your code?
Yeah, they're a little nasty in the way they're implemented, because they kind of, for example, you can't use them in the constructor, because at the end of the constructor, you only get like the fully constructed object. So talking to the reference counting part before that, I mean, you can't do it in Objective-C as well, but kind of in C++, just the general architecture of the language invites you to make that mistake more often.
Well,
and so they have like special function calls with which you can get like a shared pointer to this, and kind of the shared pointers, they work essentially without the object itself knowing about it. Which is nice if you have an object from somewhere else and you don't want to rewrite it to have like an retain and release method. But that means they kind of create like a little bit of extra state where they keep the reference count and things like that. And so you can't just take a straight pointer to that object and use it as a shared pointer, but rather you create it, turn it into a shared pointer, and from then on only use that shared pointer. And if you at any point kind of typecast it back to a regular pointer and then put it into another shared pointer, you'd kind of get like an aliasing effect where you have like two shared pointers fighting about the object. And there's a bunch of details, and it's a very complex bit of template code that makes them a little scary. So you kind of say like, if you don't need them, you don't use them. But there's a lot of objects where you just say, well, I want clear ownership semantics, and they get passed around a lot, and the guy who creates them doesn't keep them. So you really want to use shared pointers in those cases. So we have lots of objects, like we have an entire OpenGL view hierarchy that uses it and things like that. But it's scary code.
Okay, so in terms of convincing people that they should actually use C++, I'm not sure we're doing a very good job here. but there you go. And I actually think we do have to wrap up. Let's see. Well, I guess that's pretty much it.
I think the one thing you can say is C++ was designed with this thing in mind that you have more control and checks at compile time.
Right. I think the other side of it is, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go on.
And that kind of helps you avoid a lot of common mistakes and a lot of little bugs, and just makes them impossible. And I've had a bunch of cases where I, like, for example, changed code and originally had an array of classes and then later had an array of instances, or the other way around, and then had like one line that still put a class in that. In C++, I would have just changed the type, and I would have noticed that there's this one guy doing it wrong.
Right. And I think the other thing is, it's one thing that we really haven't gotten too much into is, but I think it's really important, is that you do get the performance improvements in C++. And I'm not sure.
And especially for like small objects, you really see the difference. Like, you should wonder, you know, why is it called NSPoint if it's not a class? No, it's actually a struct, NSRect as well.
Right.
And those things could actually be real classes and could be used just like any other class in C++ without any difference or that much difference in performance. So you can actually, like, at certain levels, C++ makes object-oriented programming cheaper and less expensive, and at other points, then the curve goes up.
Right. And I think, certainly the fact that, you know, like, Clang itself is written in C++.
C++,
couldn't write a compiler in Objective-C and have it be as performant as you needed it to be.
Yeah.
And there's other areas.
But I mean, for... For most stuff, you don't need it. I'm honest enough to say that. But, you know, for example, if you have hardware drivers, you want it. If you're talking to platforms that don't have Objective-C, having C++ is a lot less painful than going down to straight C.
Yep. Okay. So I guess we'll leave it at that for now. all right. So now I'm going to put your information in the show notes. You do have a Twitter handle.
Yes, I'm Uli Witness on Twitter.
Uli Witness, right. Much easier
so
to spell
U-L-I.
Than Wrench.
Yeah, true.
Just ULI plus Witness. And my Twitter handle is apontius, A-P-O-N-T-I-O-U-S. And you can find the Edge Cases website at edgecasesshow.com for things like our iTunes link. And show notes and more. So thanks for listening this week. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.